Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. New UN data on the economic impact of COVID-19 has confirmed what many have been thinking. Workers haven't been hit like this in generations. According to the International Labour Organization, ILO, people trying to earn a living suffered massively in 2020 after the coronavirus started spreading globally early last year. ILO Director General Guy Ryder told journalists on Monday that the impact has been four times worse than the last major financial crisis over a decade ago.
This has been the most severe crisis for the world of work since the Great Depression of the 1930s. Its impact is far greater than that of the global financial crisis of 2009. When comparing with the last quarter of 2019, we now see that 8.8% of global working hours were lost in the course of the year. And that is the equivalent of 255 million full-time jobs.
These lost working hours came from reduced time at work, or what ILO called unprecedented levels of unemployment that affected 114 million people. The ILO said that pandemic restrictions may have accounted for the bulk of these people leaving the labour market, either because they were unable to work or because they stopped looking. The UN body said that these massive losses resulted in an 8.3% drop in global income from work, equivalent to $3.7 trillion, or 4.4% of the world's economy, not taking into account cash subsidies for workers. The Sri Lankan government should end its policy of compulsorily cremating victims of COVID-19, UN human rights experts said on Monday. In a joint appeal, special rapporteurs Ahmed Shahid, Fernanda Varens, Clément Nielet-Sossivul and Talaleng Mofokeng said that the practice ran contrary to the beliefs of Muslims and other minorities. It ran the risk of increasing prejudice, intolerance and violence, they said in a statement, insisting that no medical or scientific evidence indicated that burying the deceased increased the risk of spreading communicable diseases such as COVID-19. To date, more than 270 COVID-19 deaths have been reported in Sri Lanka. A significant number have come from the minority Muslim community. All of the deceased were cremated in line with amended health guidelines for COVID-19 patients, which were issued last March. To Syria, finally, where fighting has killed at least 18 children since the start of the year. The alert from UN Children's Fund UNICEF came as it issued a call for greater access to millions in need and greater funds to provide essential aid. UNICEF Executive Director Henrietta Fore said in a statement that the fast-spreading COVID-19 pandemic was making it harder for families to survive, let alone provide even basic education and protection for their children. In addition to the threat of violence, poverty and severe weather were adding to the problems caused by fuel shortages, mounting food prices, a lack of basic services, and destroyed water networks. In Geneva, meanwhile, talks resumed on Monday on a new constitution for the war-torn country after nearly a decade of conflict. Ahead of discussions between Syrian delegates that are scheduled to last all week, UN Special Envoy Geir Pedersen said that although the last 10 months have been the calmest in almost a decade of conflict in Syria, front lines have barely shifted and the situation could break down at any moment. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Kansas.
Kansas.
Let's talk about
Radio Free Kansas out of North Jefferson County, Kansas.
Common side effects include heart failure, persistent fever, bruising, bleeding, lymphoma, nervous system, and blood disorders.
The message is now part of and registered in your subconscious mind. Every time you say, see, hear, or think.
Radio Free Kansas.
That's your key phrase. It will trigger the entire message without your being aware of it.
Oh, man, that is just wrong.
If you wish to survive, you need to cultivate a strong mental attitude.
It's a fool who looks for logic in the chambers of the human heart.
Coming up, John Grant.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson.
John Grant, we have, I think, I've seen if everything works right. John, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
All right, man, I'm telling you. The impeachment trial, as we speak, has begun in the Senate, and I was listening to it live on C-SPAN just now as before I tuned in, and Rand Paul was there. Ooh. Saying, well, look, you know, there's Maxine Waters. He brings up the burning cities. I don't know where they're all burning up. I mean, some blocks.
Well, I mean, that's a nice metaphor, you know, when you're wound up, you know, like he must have been.
Yeah, he was really giving the Democrats hell, you know, about this impeachment trial. It's really, I mean, it was just, he was naming names, you know, of incendiary speech that he perceived that, you know, that they're going after a man who's a private citizen. I mean, this impeachment trial is a sham. I mean, Rand Paul is just really on a roll. I mean, now, a few days ago on the Sunday Talking Heads, he was saying that that there should be an investigation into the election results, that there was widespread fraud and stuff like that. So it's just, I mean, it's really interesting to see the times we're in.
Right.
We have a caller,
right,
by the way. Caller,
oh.
I know you're I'll put you on in just a minute, but I want John to review some of his thoughts and what you've got on the New York Times about the impeachment trial.
Well,
just
the Times is very, very interesting today because obviously it's, you know, quite something to live in an interesting time, as they say. This is just unbelievable, the moment, historical moment that we're all living through, and we're not quite sure how it's coming out. Because I think, you know, to get the master shot here of all this, you know, I've been reading about this Alexei Navalny in Russia. So you can't, and all the demonstrations that have happened because of his return to Moscow and arrest. And so you can't, you know, you can't totally divorce what's happening in the United States right now with the transfer of power to a very skimpy Democratic majority you know, the machinations of the leftover McConnell, you know, majority in the Senate and things like that, and with what's going on, you know, and of course prosecuting the ex-president in an impeachment, which seems to be perfectly legal. Because what they want to do is not obviously throw him out because he's gone, but what they want to do is, you know, legally prevent him from ever holding public office again. And that's a legitimate, legally it would seem, a legitimate thing to do. So this sort of drives a wedge between Republicans. Usually Republicans are right on target and right on message with themselves. All of a sudden, you know, do we hang on to Donald Trump or do we, for our own benefit or the future of this party? In other words, if you hang on to him, is it possible his coattails will drag us down the porcelain device and we'll all go down the toilet together, you know? Or, you know, is the future in Donald Trump? Do we grab hold of Donald Trump as a, you know, maybe to run in 2022 or 2024 or something? Which, you know, Lindsey Graham seems to now suddenly say, well, we need Trump in the party and all that. So you have this schism in the party, in the Republican Party. At the same time, the Democrats are just, you know, they've been out of power so long, they feel their oats, and they're, you know, the hell with you, we're taking over as best we can. So the argument in the Senate, for instance, it becomes whether they use the nuclear project, or whatever they call it, the nuclear option, which means to eliminate the filibuster, and that way, and they can do that on a dime by a majority, and they eliminate it, and then, you know, for 2 years, theoretically, they would have the right to write the rules because they could pass things by a 51% margin with Harris as the vice president. So all this is going on, and you know, yesterday Chuck Schumer, the new majority leader Democrat, was giving an interview, and he said he was refused Mitch McConnell's latest early gambit here. And before the interview was over, Mitch McConnell cravenly abandoned that strategy and completely gave up. He was going to, you know, try to finagle it so that they couldn't even, you know, start reorganizing the Senate according to the Democrats. So, you know, that fight is on. It's not over yet. And so whether the Democrats will vote to eliminate this filibuster stuff, and that way, they can put through anything. They have the two houses and the president. Boom, you know, they've got all this legislative options. But then again, if the Republicans come back, they could do the same thing. So, you know, it's all being struggled with now. There's a Democratic senator from West Virginia, Manchin, who is kind of linked with the Republicans, and John Tester.
God, I do not like that guy. I don't even like to use the word hate. I try to use it guardedly, but I do not like that guy. That guy is in the wrong way.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, whether you like him or not, these are the powers that are sort of, you know, factoring in on this. So it's a real, real tricky situation. That's one thing, but the Senate hearing, the Senate trial, rather, of the impeachment of the second impeachment of Donald Trump. You know, I watched the march of nine managers who will argue as prosecutors in the Senate trial march from the House of Representatives very solemnly with cameras on them through the Senate, through the Congress building, through these areas where the yahoos had broken in and broken windows and banged on doors and done whatnot, solemnly walked through and delivered their indictment or impeachment to the Senate, and Raskin read it. And I'd read it before, but it sounded a whole hell of a lot more serious when he was reading it on the Senate floor, because it's like going to trial and you have jurors that want the trial to go away because it's embarrassing to them, but at the same time, it was their workplace, their house, that was violated by the crime that they're actually dealing with. It's amazing. So I think it's possible, although everybody's sort of poop on it, is doubtful. I think there is a possibility that he could be convicted. Because the Constitution sort of hangs in the balance. Because it's so obvious that what he did was outrageous, with, you know, somebody murdered, a policeman murdered and stuff like that. Does the impeachment matter at all? Does the Constitution really matter, or are we kidding ourselves that the Constitution is just a joke? And it seems to be that's what this vote is about. It's really, really serious. So it was interesting to watch that yesterday. Anyway, that's... I also put that in line with what's going on in Russia, because it's the same. There's this online social media called Telegram, which was started by a libertarian. Talk about the senator libertarian you just mentioned. A libertarian in Russia started this social media called Telegram that everybody's now gravitating to because it's uncensored. And you have opposition to Putin organizing through Telegram, to the point that Putin's chief propagandist is on Telegram as well. In other words, it's become so popular that Putin's people have to be on it, that this is now being taken up by the right wing, the people who were honoring, you know, did January 6th here in the United States. So the kind of anti-democratic movement in the United States is also using Telegram the same way the anti-authoritarian protesters are using it in Russia. So I don't know. It just blows my mind. So it's a really interesting sort of situation. But I've gone on with that enough.
Oh, no, no, that's okay. I was listening to it. You know, Telegram, I'm mm-hmm. not sure. I'm still studying it. To me, it's sort of like the quintessential flash mob. I mean, how do you organize a uh-huh. flash mob? A unique term
right.
of the 21st century.
Yep.
And, you know, let's go back to some of the old days. All these people love to worship the colonial times of the American Revolution, you know.
Sure.
You know, it was a pamphlet. A pamphlet
right.
usually
absolutely, yeah.
printed, handed mm-hmm. hand-to-hand by horse or, you know, I mean, there was no telegrams.
Right.
It was
Paul Revere.
It was very,
he was getting the
it
word.
It was very
out.
Slow. It was very
right.
slow communicating. But now, in the 21st century, and I believe Telegram is encrypted. It's not like Facebook. I'm going to.
Yes.
I hate to join.
I think
them.
It is. Yeah.
And this encryption allows them to organize flash mobs on a very quick basis, with literally lightning speed. And I think it's one more attempt to avoid identifying yourself to the authorities
right.
as an
right.
as an organizer.
Exactly.
And I think 50 mm-hmm. years ago, 50
right.
years ago, I would have probably seriously thought of joining the Boogaloo Boys.
Yeah.
Or
okay.
the Weathermen, you know, the violent
right,
overthrow
right, right.
of the government.
It was, you know, if Tuesday it would have been the Boogaloo Boys, Wednesday it would have been the Weathermen.
Yeah. 50 years ago, the violent overthrow
right.
of the government was devoid in my young head as
right.
Anything that would involve serious bloodshed, okay?
Right.
I didn't
right.
think about the bloodshed or the violence, you know? I
right.
thought that I was all fire and fury, a young guy who read some books and was
mm-hmm.
watching the Vietnam War, and I was not going to go to it, and I was against it.
Right.
But I was just
right.
by myself in a small country town.
Right.
Literally, no one else dared speak about this, you know, in these small
sure.
towns. They wouldn't say, I'm not going to be drafted. I'm not going to go to the war, and I'm certainly not going to, obey the government's
right.
orders about this, and I'm certainly not going to try to overthrow it. Well, I was just the opposite, okay?
Right.
And
right,
I think
right.
I think that many of these people today have these same childish illusions about the use of violence in the overthrow of the governments. And,
I think you're right.
I think they're very
right.
tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
yeah.
the and that's what is the purpose. We got a listener. We have actually several callers. Listeners,
uh-huh.
if you want to be on a hot topic,
I guess.
Well, yeah. If you want to be on, you have to punch one that sends me a little signal. I have one that's ready to come on, I think.
All right.
But I'm a little we're too casual about this violent overthrow of the government nowadays.
Right.
You know, the purpose of the show and of This Can't Be Happening, and by the way, listeners, there's a
right.
new article on This Can't Be Happening by you, John. I read it today. And by the way, it will be in the featured piece of it. Featured piece in Discomfort Magazine, the upcoming hard copy.
Well, hey, what an honor in Discomfort Magazine. I love it.
Yes. I mean, this is a great – it's the headline, I think, is three Wednesdays of January.
It works as a sort of a narrative of the 2 weeks, yeah.
Mm. Oh, it's a great – the Wednesdays of January. It's a great
– Well,
My
wife, Luann, pointed out one day that all this happened on Wednesdays. You know, the Insurrectionary Act was a Wednesday. A week later, Nancy Pelosi and company got the act together and impeached and slammed the gavel down and did it in 24 hours. That was a Wednesday. And then Wednesday was the inauguration, which we're all wondering, like, oh, my God, is it going to be a shootout or is it going to be bombings or what the hell's going on? So, it's, I mean, this was quite a drama, quite a two-week drama.
It's a great article. I want
and I sort of couched it in the lead as sort of the a remake of 7 days in May, you know. And,
right.
Like
I got
three
that
Wednesdays.
I got that immediately.
I was
great article. Thank you. It's available at thiscan'thiscan'thbehappening.net for free, but for private subscription, limited distribution, the Discomfort magazine will be having it featuring it at the front part of the. Here's our caller. Let's see what the caller has. I haven't screened this caller, so I don't know who.
All right. We'll see. Hello.
You flagged it. You're on the air, 508.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Yes. My name is Matthew E. O'Neill. I'm the number one ranked editor for Everipedia.org. Everipedia is an internet encyclopedia set run for profit from Santa Monica, California. I'm also the host of the Everipedia Boxing Show on Spotify. My name is Matthew O'Neill, and my boxing career was covered by Into Boxing in 2020. It's a United Kingdom-based company. I beat Preston Hartsock, who was an armed forces in the super heavyweight division.
Okay,
Matthew.
Other than promoting your show, could you contribute to the discussion about the impeachment trial beginning today?
Yeah, the reason for the call is I'm also a registered Republican, and I've been a Republican since 2012. I voted for Mitt Romney, and I also voted for Donald Trump. I voted Republican 8 consecutive years. I also contributed to Trump victory. I created articles for the Trump campaign.
Well, what do you feel the future of the Republican Party is when you think of Donald Trump's legacy and future? Is he going to be tied at the hip with the Republicans in the future, or are they going to cut him loose?
I don't think that Donald Trump will ever run again. That was his last chance as president. I'd like to reiterate the claim that I do believe that Trump might have won Georgia and might have won Pennsylvania, that maybe he lost Pennsylvania thanks to fraudulent ballots. And he might
I live in Pennsylvania. I've lived here since 1975. And I will grant you that this is one slimy state, that there is a lot of corruption, which I've written about for 50, 40 years or whatever the hell it is, as a journalist. So, yes, Harrisburg, the capital, is a cesspool. But it's run by Republicans, you know. So we have a state that is, you know, James Carville jokingly said it's like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Alabama in between. Well, that is the schism, rural-urban, that Pennsylvania politics centers on. So, but this idea that he lost the election or that Biden lost this election in Pennsylvania is to me pure corrupt nonsense, because the only corruption they could find I'm aware of in the country was a Republican case in North Carolina. That most cases are silly little things and involve one or two votes or something, but nothing that would overthrow the vote. In fact, if anybody could manipulate the election system in the state of Pennsylvania, which is, as I say, legislatively dominated by rural Republicans, it would be rural Republicans, because there was who would be corrupting the election, in my view, in my humble view. So I'll leave it at that. That's my state, in other words. What do you think of that? Do you think that they could have, you know, stolen all those, so to speak, votes in Pennsylvania?
I think that over the next year or two, we're going to find out for sure.
I think you're right.
We'll find out in time. I don't think it was a good idea to impeach Trump either time. I think it was bad for the country. I think it was a bad decision.
We're going to disagree on that, because Again, you're a Republican. I respect that. You seem to be a reasonable man, which is good. I've been a Democrat, but more important, I've been a veteran anti-war activist, and I was in Vietnam, and I've been to Iraq as a journalist, and I opposed the wars and all that kind of stuff. So I'm, I guess, much more to the left than you would be, but I think that Donald Trump did some pretty terrible things, that are sort of gangsterish in nature, and the things like the law and the and the Constitution meant nothing to him. I don't know. Maybe let me hear what you have to say here.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I think that Joe Biden will be a good politician, will be a good president, because he has over 40 years of experience as a politician. So I think that we are in good hands with Joe Biden as president. I think over the next year or two, as further investigations are launched, we're going to find out more about this. Did Donald Trump actually win Georgia? A lot of people really believe he won that state outright. Also, we're going to find out about all the things that you're talking about. What really occurred during Trump's 4 years?
Exactly. Yeah.
We don't really know.
I think you're right that, I'm sure all of us on the left, if you will, probably have boogeyman Donald Trump a little too much, right? If you will. So, as I say, over time, history will sort it out and we'll know. But we're in the middle of it right now. Obviously, it's still we're talking about civil war now. Now that as a peace activist, I'm thinking like, well, what is my role now? It's not as a partisan. It's like, well, how do we stop civil war, from breaking out from the lunatic right and the lunatic left? If you know what I mean.
Again,
and I have many friends on the lunatic left, of course.
I'm one of them.
Yes, my name is Matthew O'Neill, and I'm also the number one ranked editor for Everpedia.org. It rivals Wikipedia, except it has enhanced video capabilities and a lot of things.
Okay, Everpedia, can you spell that for me?
Everipedia.org. My name is Matthew E. O'Neill, O'Neill.
Gotcha.
I did 4 years on active duty in the United States Air Force. I got an honorable discharge. After my discharge, I earned a Bachelor of Science from Colorado Christian University, and then I worked for Harvard University. I was a Democratic candidate in 2006 for Clark County Commission in Nevada against Rory Reed, Harry Reid's son. I lost, and I voted Republican in the last 8 years.
All right.
And right now we have over 400,000 coronavirus deaths, so every day counts. And I'd like to say that I do support Joseph Biden. I think that he's going to be a good president. I just think every single day is going to count, as we have over 400,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree with you more. That issue, obviously, no pun intended, trumps everything else. That we have to address that for the economy, for everything. If there is a we in this United States, if it is a United States at all anymore, we do have to sort that one out first and figure out what's going on. But the country is not going to be the same country. Mike's brother, a trucker, uses the metaphor, which I always thought was the best, as a cross-country trucker going through a tunnel, a huge, long tunnel, which many of us have driven through on the highways, that the COVID-19 episode is a tunnel. And the only thing we know is, when we come out of that tunnel, we're going to be a different country than when we went in. Now, how different, in what way, to what degree, you can argue about every detail. But I think, as a fact, that has to be accepted, that this, because of the political struggles it set off, with masks being a political item that if you wear it or you don't wear it, it tells you what president you're for, et cetera. I just think it's going to be interesting where the country goes after COVID is addressed, because it's all going to change. The COVID-19 episode is taking this country more than anything else, because it was headed that way with individuals already, onto the internet and to iPhones and social media, that virtual world is actually becoming, you know, an adjunct of the real world, and it's just going to change everything. Maybe that's enough futurism here right now.
Yes, I would like to thank you for letting me be on your show today.
Oh, pleasure. Yeah, good talking with you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, Mike, that was a good call.
Well, that's a strangely civilized call on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I know. You know, we're so whacked out these days. We expect, oh, my God, just going to throw what at me now?
The UFOs and no vaccine. All vaccines are microchips. You know, yes, we get quite a few of them on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just trolling. They just troll and look around. But
well, I like the idea. I like the idea of being afraid of a vaccine, and then because you have concerns or, you know, of authority, or you have a problem with authority, or recalcitrant, like, you know, I used to be as a kid, you know, that you associate all the evils of your recalcitrism and, you know, the authority that's trying to take you over with this needle they're sticking in your arm, because it is, you know, you deal with medicine, there's so much you don't know, my God, you know. You get into what these doctors say, and it's like you can't understand it because it's chemistry and everything. You know, it's like, I'm lost. It's like this great pool of knowledge up there is somehow screwing me over, you know, and it just comes down to this little goddamn needle. Oh, by the way, I was inoculated at the VA on Saturday.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, I got my first Pfizer shot on Saturday. Yeah.
Have you felt any symptoms?
Because I'm a veteran, and thank me for my service. Yes, absolutely.
Have you felt any symptoms?
No. Well, I have a bruised arm. It gives you a little bruise.
No.
Yeah, well, just the sticker, you know, the stick in your arm.
Yeah, but no,
but
fever
cool.
Or anything. Yeah.
Oh, God, no, nothing. In fact, I learned about it the night before with a woman I know who works in the VA and said they were doing this. And I got down and she said, you know, A to M, you go from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. Well, I got there about 10 minutes to 7. Well, there's already 100 people lined up, packed in the VA.
Really?
Hobby, you know.
Oh, wow.
And we're going like, oh, great, you know, I'm down here, I'm within a foot and a half of the next guy, you know, and masks on, and I'm thinking like, this is hilarious. I come down here, I get COVID-19, then I get the vaccine, and I go home, and like, which wins the day? I don't know, you know. But anyway, I got it, and we worked it out, and it was a great event. I really had a wonderful time talking to all these vets, making jokes about the VA and, oh, God, do we know what's going on? And, of course, nobody knew what was going on. So everybody was up for good jokes about being like, the VA knows, you know, this and that, conspiracies and stuff. And so we were all having a good time. And then they gave me the shot. And the thing about this shot is I've seen on TV so many clips of punking this needle into somebody's arm, you know, starting with Joe Biden. And it's a needle that's about an inch and a half long, you know. And they just plunk that sucker right in there and go, oh, my God, you know. But it is such a tiny little needle that I'm going like, well, has he done it? He said there may be a little pinch. I'm going, well, has he done it yet? And the next thing you know is running, rubbing my my shoulder with alcohol. I couldn't feel a thing. It must be such a tiny little needle with a hole in the middle.
Well,
it's, well, you think of the wonders of medical science. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, science has come a long way. Yeah.
I know. I mean, used to get a shot, they'd now, stick you with a nail, you know. It's like, God.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are people that are nervous about this, and understandably so.
Sure.
Because, you know, now, you know, on Mondays, listeners, I have an octogenarian host. And no reflection, nothing bad about it. But, I mean, they want their shots. And they're worried, you know, when are we going to get them? And,
right. Well, what are they worried
and
about?
They were, well, I mean, there is some justification. I mean, this is Operation Warp Speed.
Right.
You know,
fair
they
enough.
Somehow avoided the field trials normally given to the, now, and that. And the field trials,
right.
If you followed every letter of the CDC or whoever, or WHO, whoever writes these guidelines,
right.
I mean,
right.
they would have
right.
taken like two or three years to get through clinical field trials and stuff like that. And so people are worried about that. And the guests were also worried about these variants. And the only thing, the best data I could come up with that I carve out of my wife, the doctor wife's brain, is that there is some legitimate concerns about the lack of time for the field trials. So that's why they are worried about. I think she called it anaphylactic shock. That's why they need to have crash carts, and that this is part. There's going to be a percentage of people who are going to have a bad reaction to it. It's not a large percentage. It's actually probably just a fraction of a percentage. Let me just report what I've learned, and that these variants that are popping up are normal. Well, they're not normal, but I mean. That they're a natural reaction to the fact that we're not controlling this.
Right.
They mutate because it's growing so it's like a wildfire.
Right.
It's growing so quickly and so fastly around the world that there
right.
are natural mutations of the virus and that this is a
right. The
this
mutations
is a bad
are
thing.
Probably responding to the existing virus, so they're getting trickier and trickier. And, yeah.
Right, right. And she gets in more detail than I care to even try to understand
right.
or
well, of course,
relate to listeners. But
doctor
and she's trying to point out that this thing, the big question is, will the vaccines? Now, Oxford in England has done a study saying that basically. The current vaccine, at least what they're producing in England, will protect you from these variants so far. Now, but they qualify that because this is a living, breathing experiment. It's not really. I mean, they have to go on past protocols, past proven practices.
I agree.
Let me finish. Past proven practices that science has used since the Renaissance, the Middle Ages. You know,
sure.
the Black Death. Yeah, they've learned this over hundreds of years that this stuff, these practices work. The problem is that they can't. How do you tell the public with any 100% certainty a certain vaccine will wipe out even the variants? And they can't.
You can't.
And this is a problem.
You can't. 100% certainty is not possible. Yeah.
Right, and it's a big deal among the public health. The doctors in public health because they're trying to figure out just like Fauci who by the way I just learned courtesy of the right wing crazy news media Newsmax that he makes $417,000 a year by the way so
Dr. Fauci
yeah that's what they say I haven't checked that out but Well, I'm sure it's checkable. But the point is that she's trying to point out is that these remedies are not unproven. They're based on, you know,
right.
Decades,
exactly.
If not centuries of practice.
Well, Operation Warp Speed was an appropriate name for it, I guess, you know, and fine. If Donald Trump had anything positive to do with warp speed development of those vaccines, you know, I think that needs to be recognized. Okay. But the point is, there is no 100% guarantee of anything. That's why we have life insurance and why we have, that sort of thing. That you have to take a risk. And the risk what is your risk? Getting COVID by going to the goddamn grocery store or whatever limited thing you do, or, you know, getting a shot and then waiting for 3 weeks, get another shot, and then within 2 weeks, you're probably, you know, much better off than you were. And so it liberates you, you know. But they, you know, when I got the shot, I waited for about an hour and a half, and all day moving to surround is, you know, God knows what was going on. But everybody was wonderful, the staff there. And then you get in there, you get your shot, and you're they have all these chairs 6 feet apart where you sit. And I say, okay, you're to sit here till 8:30. It's 3:30 when it was like 3:15 I got stuck. So they make you sit there for 15 minutes at least to see if you have it go into anaphylactic shock. I've known that from when I was on the ambulance. If you go into anaphylactic shock, it'll probably happen pretty quickly that you'll swell up, you have trouble breathing, and you'll have a rash or some redness or something. So, there is a danger that you will have a reaction like anaphylactic shock, but it's a real small minority for some reason. And as long as you're within a hospital or clinic context, you know, they can address it, and then you'll probably be fine. Anyway, that's my take.
I tend to trust
medicine somewhat, you know.
Yeah, well, this is the thing she more or less ended up with because I was pressing
right.
her. Because I knew my hosts on a Monday show were concerned about this. And And she said basically that it's a very small danger of the reaction, the allergic reaction that occurs.
And the anaphylactic shock is not lethal.
Well,
it could be, but it does. It's not necessarily lethal. Let's put it that way. But if you're very weak and elderly, it might be an issue. Yes.
Right, and she's not telling them to do anything, but she's just pointing out
of course.
For me. Now I'm a reclusive hermit that just runs a small printing press.
Her particular
and
old goat, right?
Yeah, I'm her old goat, and her favorite old goat, by the way.
Her favorite.
She more or less said, "Well, you don't really care because you don't do anything but go out and get booze and come back maybe once every 2 weeks, you know. So you don't really matter." But she advised
Goodell goes on his booze run. Okay, right.
Yeah, I go on my booze run, pick up some groceries, and check my mail, and then come home. That's what I do, and I never see anybody, you know, hardly ever. So. But she advised me, she said, well, you can wait for the Johnson & Johnson shot. She thinks that that's going to be more appropriate, more massive, doesn't require the refrigeration. And she says by that time they'll have tested and retested it more, and that is better. And she pointed out that what was the last thing she said? Oh, this may very well be because of we now have three or four variants, one from South Africa, others from Brazil and other places. She said the travel restrictions are not punitive. It's just a simple thing of slowing down the growth of the variants. And that most likely what will happen is that we'll have to get these shots, like the flu shots, every year for the variants to kill the variants. There you go. That's my official report from...
And I think that's good. And it's good that everybody knows this, and that also... you know, I'm still wearing a mask every time I go out to the grocery store or wherever
the hell
I go.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm going to, even after I get my second shot,
yeah,
I'm going to be still wearing a mask. And I'm getting better masks, figure out good masks and things
unknown,
like that.
John, this is an unknown. She's saying this is an unknown of your transmissibility. Even though you may not get it, you may be able to infect others.
Fair enough.
So she's more or less
exactly.
Safe.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of unknowns in this thing yet, but it's not. They're not.
But one,
unknowns.
The But the one thing, that we should get over in this country, you know, if we want to talk about this country, this huge thing, you know, I'm up here in Pennsylvania, you're in Kansas. This whole fetish, political fetish of the mask.
Yeah.
You know.
There's
a very smart, documented reason about why people should wear masks. It's to get over this hurdle and herd immunity, whatever the hell they want to call it, you know. The point is, and then you get it enough, and in other countries they've done this because they were rigid about it and smart about this, and they did. And now they're walking around in whatever, the one I photograph I saw, people are now walking around with masks, without masks, you know. It's that, they licked it to that level. And of course, if it comes back and the evidence shows there's a pop of it here, you know, and it's spreading, then the masks will come back. So it's a sort of we're obviously more savvy as far as monitoring this, things like this, because of the pandemic. We've learned a lot, and people should get over this fetish with the mask. It's not a political thing just because Donald Trump decided it was, you know. And but you're right. You have the right to wear a mask or not wear a mask. But the law has the right, if it's established properly as a law, to dictate that you do wear a mask in certain contexts. That's what laws are about. They're social contracts that societies make. And, you know, sometimes you don't like the laws. A lot of laws I don't like. And I try my best to obey them.
Well, the another thing, so they look for yearly COVID-19 shots, most likely they'll be, and that herd immunity is achieved more safely by the use of vaccines rather than this is like a truth,
yeah.
You know, that
absolutely.
People do not. Rand Paul would accelerate you herd immunity. This is, but without using any vaccine.
Well, that way he's encouraging everybody goes out and breathes and coughs on each other and makes love and you know, shoots juices back and forth and French kisses everybody, you know. So yeah, well, great. Let's all get it, and we'll, you know, have a giant orgy, and the country will decide, the survival of the fittest. If you can't cut it, you're dead. You know, it's like Darwinian, total Darwin approach to the libertarian, to this idea of this little germ. Hey, if you can't survive this germ, you're a fucking loser. Forget about it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Well, that's not the society we have, you know. We're not a libertarian frontier society. You know, we're something else.
Au contraire.
Well, talking to somebody out there on the frontier, I guess.
Well, they live in their minds. They think it every day they wake up is another episode of Gunsmoke. Or the Alamo.
Oh yeah, well, your old dad always loved Gunsmoke, and he said the reason he liked Matt Dillon so much is Matt Dillon would shoot a guy and then he'd empty his gun into it. My dad said that was Matt Dillon, his hero. He'd empty his gun into the guy prone on the ground.
Your dad probably would.
My dad was actually, ironically, a very gentle person.
He would take him down with one shot, right? He would take him down with one shot. It's always just one. Did you notice it's always just one shot? Just boom, I got him.
Oh, I know. Well, obviously, Matt Dillon was the baddest motherfucker around.
Bam, 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 bam. Yeah. Goddamn, dot.
Well,
bam,
every show started with, you know, he's in the street from behind. He's flapping leather. He's going to make the fast draw. Knocks the guy down. Bam, you know.
Well, that makes it fair.
Guns.
The chivalry. Fucking joke.
And I think the guy that he shot, he got royalty checks every week when they showed it.
Oh, I'd like to think that. I hope you're right.
You're right.
You know, speaking as a guy who labors under the under capitalism, I would like to see there's some, you know, some mercy. You know, oh yeah, I get a royalty check for just that one half a second there, Brian. But her point about accelerating herd immunity through science is the overwhelming thing is it saves lives. Because if you do it the Rand Paul libertarian way, you're going to have 1.5 to 2 million dead Americans quick. Now we're up to estimate of 650,000 dead Americans. That's because we were badly administered. We were not.
Yeah, but also let's look at it this way, that, you know, the way Ron Paul wants it is basically the way in feudal times they had it in the Black Death, you know, where they'd have the biggest loser in town would have a cart, and he'd go around and he'd shovel bodies into it, and they'd take them away and dump them into somewhere, a ravine somewhere, you know. Is that how you want to establish herd immunity, Senator Paul? You klutz, you know?
After feudalism
and the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages and all that stuff, because of the Black Death and all these horrors, there was this thing called the Enlightenment and the rise of science and figuring out what the fuck is really going on here, you know? And because of that, we have the idea of vaccines, and now we have the technology that produces them at warp speed. We're going like, holy Christ, you know? This is an amazing... Yeah. Example of the rise of civilization in the world, you know, and suddenly, you know, we're second guessing it. Well, you got to second guess everything. That's the scientific method, frankly. But I don't know. People are just so, you know, they get into religion, they scare themselves to death, you know, and
UFOs. You're missing UFOs
just as much. Yeah. You know, I think the next thing, the next breakout that's going to be is that's going to really weird us out in this world is at some point somebody comes up and, you know, in, you know, all these secret sci-fi areas that the military supposedly has an alien somewhere in New Mexico, you know, and things like that. Something like that will break that. There really is other life out there. And
well,
it will be like, whoa, it's not just that really there is extraterrestrial life out there? Well, I mean, really, Mike, I mean, think about it. You know, they say there are as many planets or stars or galaxies in the universe as there are grains sand on all the beaches of all of the world.
Yeah, I know.
Now, you don't, if you believe in that kind of mind-boggling metaphor, that there's not some kind of life somewhere?
Well, I prefer Carl Sagan's analogy. He said, more or less, not his words, but more or less, they probably, if they exist, they would probably come here and go, these people are not going to make it. Let's not waste our time on them.
Well, you know, do you ever read Mark Twain's Letters to the Earth? Snappy. It's the Archangel Michael who's writing back to God about the Earth, which is an experiment in morals. And it was one of the most influential things I've ever read when in the 70s.
Right.
You know, Letters to Earth. It's like, and it was things like this. It was, you know, Michael's writing back about how wonderful humanity is. They do all these great things. They're generous and all this. You know, it's like a whole page of the wonderful things that humanity does. And then at the end it says, you know, if they run into a problem, then they lynch a nigger. You know.
Well, here's the thing.
And I'm going like, whoa, dude, like this,
yeah.
what a dark view of humanity. But, it, you know, this is what he was good at. He was a satirist showing that, yeah, that
right.
really Mark. We do some pretty dark things.
Well, you know, when Mark Twain wrote that, I'm sure that was almost an everyday occurrence in America.
Yes.
Indeed.
You know? Yeah, indeed.
But I think, and interesting, you talk about lynching humanity.
Right.
I was thinking back about that as you were talking about Sagan and his commentary about alien life coming to Earth.
Uh-huh.
He put it, he also qualified it, the aliens are saying, well, also, let's see,
mm-hmm.
Give them another 100 years and see if they don't destroy themselves through nuclear war.
Right.
That's what.
Right.
That was the other thing.
Well, you know, I mean, the day there's the great movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. You know, that was
I didn't. Before I saw that, I heard Carl Sagan say, "That's pretty smart, man. That's pretty smart." Hey, we got 3 minutes left.
Okay.
What would you? I've got a movie to throw at you, listeners.
Okay.
And John. It's
that?
Called Francophonia. Francophonia, FrancoFonia,
uh-huh.
And it's a very interesting movie. It's available on Prime Amazon. You can get it, and
it's
amazing.
Pretty new movie.
I watched it. Have you seen it?
No. Was it about
France
or what? From you?
Yeah. It's about the Louvre and basically European civilization during
Francophonia.
And it's like the history of the Louvre. It's a cinematic essay, is what I would call it.
Sounds wonderful! Wow.
Delivered by a Russian, it was released in 2015, so it's out there, and it's really a very interesting movie about the influence of how when the Nazis came to Paris. What was going on, and how was civilization being preserved versus, on a second hand, how the attitude of art versus in Russia, you know, happened with the Nazis in Russia. So it's a very interesting.
Sounds great. I'll check it out. Francophonia.
Yeah, Francophonia with an F, FrancoFonia, and it's very worth it, listeners. I watched it last night during Firewatch, and it absolutely hypnotized me because it tells me things about empire, exploitation, pillaging, and of art, and the merits of museums, and why museums are so important, you know, so I just... Very interesting. It's a documentary.
Well, again, talk about the Enlightenment and all that stuff, museums, encyclopedias, the science. It all came out of that.
And that was because
they were sick and tired of having to find herd immunity in the normal way. You know?
Right. Oh, by the way, one of the ways that they watched herd immunity was the bit. Yeah, at one time when she was particularly poisonous at me, she was saying, well, they don't live like you. She said, you know, 500, 600 years ago, you would be like, if you would be a baron. You live in a castle wall, and you would watch all the peasants die.
Right,
black
those dirty little peasants.
She brings that up to me. She throws that in my face every so often.
Well, she sounds like she has a grasp on feudal times and the history and all that. Yeah.
She read
something, obviously. She reads.
She
well, my best ever.
John Grant.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. John Grant, listeners.